Outside, the water was becoming filled with falling marine snow. Tiny, light gray particles, consisting of dead organisms and waste produced by the sea creatures above. Those inside the submersible felt as though they were driving through a light blizzard. "We have the bottom," Pitt alerted Giardino.
"You'll find her 200 yards southeast,"
Birch's voice came through the depths.
"Follow a course of 140 degrees and you should come up on the aft end of the forward section where it tore away."
14 minutes later, the mangled wreckage came into view.
"Where to?" Giardino inquired.
Misty took several moments to study the interior deck plans of the Emerald Dolphin and get her bearings. Finally, she circled an area and passed it to Giardino.
"You want to go inside?"
he asked Pitt, knowing he'd be less than pleased with the answer.
"As far as we can go," Pitt replied. "If at all possible, I'd like to penetrate into the chapel where the crew reported the fire started."
He called up the deep encounter to report their situation, but there was no response. No voice replied over the speakerphone.
"Odd," he said, perplexed. "They're not answering."
"The communications equipment probably malfunctioned," Giardino said calmly.
Pitt wasted no more time trying to raise the control center. They had an hour of bottom time left.
"Go on in," he ordered.
Already, Sea Life was probing the wreckage and setting up housekeeping. They spotted several rat-tailed fish, a species of shrimp, and what could only be described as a sea slug that had somehow wiggled its way into the jagged ruins. There was a mild current, but not enough to cause Giardino a problem in keeping the navigator steady. The dim outline of what was left of the decks and bulkheads came out of the gloom.
"Rise to the fourth deck," directed Misty. "It leads through a shopping mall to the chapel."
Slowly, Giardino maneuvered the sub upward using only the thrusters. At the deck Misty had indicated, he hovered the navigator while they stared inside the wreckage, now illuminated by the four forward lights. Melted pipes and electrical wiring hung down like distorted tentacles.
"We'll never get around that," said Giardino.
"Not around," Pitt contradicted, "but through. Run our bow against those pipes dead ahead." Without argument, Giardino eased the submersible into a maze of melted pipe. The pipes parted and crumbled, as if they were made out of poor-quality plaster of Paris, sending out a cloud of ashes that the sub easily slipped through.
"You call that right," muttered Giardino.
"I figured they'd be brittle after being subjected to intense heat." They soared through the charred wreckage of the shopping avenue. Nothing was left of the open three-deck avenue of stylish boutiques. Giardino cautiously navigated around and over the piles of debris that rose like a range of hills covered with jagged black lava rock.
"Coming to the site of the chapel," Misty notified them.
Pitt lay on his stomach and peered through the bottom viewport as Giardino covered the distance and then stopped the sub. It hung over the space once occupied by the Emerald Dolphin's non-denominational chapel. The only distinguishing evidence that they were in the right area were melted floor mountings in rows that held the pews. With a light touch, Pitt moved the articulated manipulator arm downward until it began probing and sifting through the charred debris with its mechanical fingers. Clearing a 10-foot square area and finding nothing of interest, he glanced at Giardino.
"Move us 5 feet forward."
Giardino complied and sat patiently until Pitt asked him to maneuver the sub to another search grid. 30 minutes later, Pitt had sifted and examined most of the chapel area. As luck would have it, he found what he was looking for in the last grid. A strange-looking substance lay in a tiny, twisted lump on the deck. Less than 6 inches in length and 2 inches wide, it did not have the usual heat-fused look to it, but rather it appeared smooth and rounded. Its colors were odd, too. Instead of black or scorched gray, it had a greenish tint to it.
"Time is up," Giardino warned. "We don't have much oxygen in reserve to reach the surface safely." I think we may have found what we came for, said Pitt. Give me another 5 minutes.
Very tenderly, he worked the fingers of the manipulator and set the payload into the artifact basket. Let's head for home. 3 hours later, the water began to turn from deep black to deep blue again, as the colors of the spectrum returned. Looking through the overhead viewport, they could see the sea's restless surface shimmering and sparkling above. There were still no communications with the survey ship on the surface. They could not see the ship because all but one of the viewports were below. They waited for the divers to come and attach the lifting cable. But after 10 minutes, there was no sign of them.
"Why not crack the hatch and have a look?" Al asked.
Pitt swung the hatch on its hinge, crawled through, and stood with his head and shoulders above the hatch. Breathing in the fresh sea air and looking around for the survey ship and small boats with the dive recovery team. The seas were empty. Deep Encounter had vanished. The hijacking came so suddenly no one on Deep Encounter realized it was happening. The skipper of an oil company utility boat contacted Captain Birch, claiming he had an injured crew member and no medical supplies. As soon as several men had boarded Deep Encounter at Birch's invitation, they threw back the blankets on the litter they carried, snatched up automatic weapons that had been hidden beneath, and turned them on Birch's survey crew.
"We are confiscating your ship," said the tall, dark man, who appeared to be the leader of the group. "No one will be harmed."